bleeding obvious, maybe, I speak as a mother. New research suggests doctors should trust parents' gut instincts more than they do, and that a parent's intuition is better than medical tests. Asking a parent whether they think their child is getting worse or better is a better diagnostic tool than all those other ones. And it should be treated as part of a child's care team. I agree. Do you? Has your gut feeling ever clashed with a doctor's opinion? Do you think doctors should listen more closely to parents? After the news, I'll tell you what happened when I inhaled eggshell over breakfast as a little girl.
On your radio, on the LBC app, and
Play LBC.
Leading Britain's conversation, this is LBC.
From Global's newsroom at 8 o'clock. In the last hour, President Trump has appeared to suggest Elon Musk will continue working with his administration. He made the remarks during a news conference called to mark the end of his time running the controversial Department of Government Efficiency.
I just want to thank Elon for his time as a special government employee. Can you imagine? They call him an employee, but it's a special government employee, and for coming and helping us.
The technology billionaire is also saying he will continue being a friend and advisor to Donald Trump. The Doge website claims it saved $175 billion by making sweeping government cuts, although the figure is widely disputed. The political commentator Matthew Shoemaker has been telling Rachel Johnson on LBC the White House is trying to control the news agenda on numerous fronts.
The administration is going to say what it wants to say in order to try and market its policies as being helpful and beneficial. You know, it really comes down to whether or not the average American voter ends up believing it. Right now, it's up in the air, generally speaking. However, I've seen polling that generally shows that people are at least very skeptical.
A prison officer has been stabbed by an inmate at a jail in Worcestershire. Police are investigating after a 25-year-old was flown to hospital from HMP Long Larton. A one-year-old girl has suffered life-changing facial injuries after a dog attack in Greater Manchester. She's now recovering in hospital after police were sent to an address in Denton last night. The animal has been destroyed. Russell Brand has pleaded not guilty to charges of rape and sexual assault. The 49-year-old actor and comedian appeared at Southwark Crown Court this morning. LBC's Fraser Knight was there.
The five charges relate to four different women with allegations that Russell Brand assaulted them between 1999 and 2005. In the courtroom, he pleaded not guilty to all of the charges, and a provisional trial date was set for June next year. Fraser Knight, LBC, Southwark Crown Court.
In sport, World Boxing will introduce mandatory gender testing to decide if fighters can compete at its events, including the 2028 Olympics. A PCR test will be used to determine an athlete's biological sex. In the city, the FTSE 100 has closed up 55 points at 87.72. The pound will buy $1.34. And €1.18. LBC weather, breezy for much of the UK overnight, with the risk of showers in the north and the west, dry and mainly clear in the south and the east, with a low of 5 degrees. From Global's newsroom, for LBC, I'm Tim Daly.
This is LBC, from Global, leading Britain's conversation with Rachel Johnson.
Three minutes past eight is the time you're listening to me, Rachel Johnson. I hope you can hear me, everyone. And those who can't hear me, do continue to text in your complaints. I am trying my best. The mic is quite close to the mouth. But in this hour, we're going to talk about a parent's instinct, what's called a mother's instinct more often, actually. There's been new research come out from the University of Bleeding Obvious. No, it's not really that. But that parents' intuition is often better than medical tests when it comes to determining a child's health. And this new research suggests that doctors should actually trust parents' gut instincts about their children's health probably a lot more than they do. Of course, we can talk too about Martha's Law that came in around a year ago after the tragic death of Merope Mills' daughter Martha, who had a bike accident and then developed various extremely life-threatening conditions that were missed despite the parents constantly trying to get consultants to pay attention, because they knew their daughter. They could see that Martha was going downhill fast, and she probably had something very, very serious, sepsis, meningitis. I think in the end it was sepsis. And Merope has campaigned relentlessly, and now a law is in place, and it's called Martha's Rule. The three components of Martha's Rule are as follows. Parents should be asked at least daily about how they're feeling, and if the child is getting, sorry, patients should be asked about how they're feeling and if they're getting better or worse, and the information acted on. Staff can ask for a review from a different team if they're concerned that a patient is deteriorating. And the escalation route, i.e. to kind of change it up, ask a different clinician, a different team to take a view on a patient. And that will always be available to patients themselves, their families and carers, and also advertised across the hospital. Now, my first guest is Jayesh Patel, and if Martha's Rule was in place when his son was being treated, I think, in a London hospital, and obviously you're here to tell the whole story, Jayesh, you don't think that necessarily you would have had the outcome that you did. You're the founder of Patients Lives Matter, a group that campaigns for a legal right, I think, to escalate, to ask for a different team, to keep parents involved. Tell us what exactly your Patients Lives Matter group is asking for.
Sure. Well, first of all, Rachel, thank you very much for having
you.
Me on.
Thank you for coming on.
Basically, my son Bahram died on the 9th of August, 2023. He had 6 life-threatening conditions and 12 other conditions. The thing is, of course, when you have a sick child for 30 years and you're 24/7 with them, you know them better than anything else under the world. And Patients Lives Matter is actually founded, first of all, to get justice for Bahram's death. We have an inquest on 2nd and 3rd of June on Monday at Southwark Coroner's Court. I'm pleading for unlawful killing as to how my son's life was taken away because of the evidence that we have. There's absolutely unbelievable through the medical notes as to the treatment Bahram received. During our time with the hospital, we asked twice for a second opinion. The first time we asked for a second opinion was on the 3rd of August when they were discharging him to come home and telling us to use treatment which failed in the hospital, oral diuretics. And when the doctors wouldn't listen, I said, may I please have a second opinion from another medical team, because there's nowhere on God's earth I can imagine this treatment working, bearing in mind it failed in the very same hospital a week earlier. I was denied that. On the 7th of August, when my son was getting critical, I again called in and begged, literally, can you please start IV diuretics? And they said no. I said, I need to speak to someone. And the consultant then called me, or the team called me at 2 o'clock in the afternoon. Once again, they said, continue trialing the oral diuretics. I said, no, there's no way on God's earth this can work. Please, may I have a second opinion? I cannot believe what I'm being told. And at the same time, it was also noted, which has been noted by the chief executive of the NHS, that I said, I do not believe in this treatment. Now, Bahram sadly died from pulmonary edema, fluid on his lungs, 24 hours later. To me, medicine is an art. It's not a science. There's so many things that often don't make sense. What may work for one may not necessarily work for another. And the best audience is the parents. We probably spent a year and a half of our lives in hospital with Bahram. When there's shifts between nurses and they have a handover, you still don't get the same continuity of understanding how the patient's doing. So in my opinion, I think that patients, parents, that any person that's been with them, mom, dad, uncle, aunt, that's physically locked in, can see things other people may miss. And it needs to be a collective team, because at the end of the day, if things do go pear-shaped, We all want to feel we tried our hardest.
I totally understand. And you wanted a second opinion, which was, as I understand it, denied. But you actually had a GP's letter and you'd found a surgeon who could have provided the second opinion.
No, I've got a GP's letter because I found a treatment that could be provided to my son, which they said couldn't. So it's very, very extensive as to how everything planned out with Boron's actual treatment. But in context of a second opinion, I never achieved a second opinion. I was told we couldn't provide one. And sadly, the arrogance for want for better expression was such, we know better than you do.
In simple terms, this is, I'm sure you've got a telephone directory of medical notes and more when it comes to legal documents. But in very simple terms, you saw something happening as a parent that you'd seen happen before with bowel ram, didn't you? And you knew what would work and what wouldn't work and what the problem was and maybe what the problem wasn't, but that you feel you weren't listened to. Is that right or not right?
I wasn't listened to, and sadly the hospital implemented assisted dying and decided that Bolram was very sick. He only had a limited time and that his interests are best served dying at home, which is again...
That's why they discharged him rather than put him through the course of treatment that you wanted him to be put through.
Well, they said to me the oral diuretics would work. And I said, no, they can't. And they continued saying they would. And then they told me, look, go home. We believe their work. If they don't, we will readmit him and start him back on intravenous diuretics. And in the meantime, we'll try to find a way that he can have these medication at home, because at the time it wasn't possible. Sadly, when I called in to having readmitted, they kept denying me. The consultant even said in her medical notes, because that's the beauty of where I am now, everything's in the medical notes. She logs in the notes, if the family ring, tell them to continue trialing oral.
Is it in the notes that this was effectively assisted dying with the discharge? That was the intention, or is that unwritten?
Well, the medical notes show a total different narrative. There's not a single mention of him cardiovascularly being critical in 1,100 pages of medical notes. However, the statement made to the coroner from the hospital to investigate the care and treatment is riddled with statements like terminal, end of life, dying to get home.
I see.
I know, Rachel, I can see your face. Trust me, darling, if it didn't happen to me, I wouldn't have lost my baby. We fought and we fought and we fought. And they just wouldn't, sadly, listen. And I don't get it. But now we need to get to the bottom of it and try to find out what is going on, because you can't do that. Nobody deserves that. Boron didn't deserve to live not being able to breathe because he didn't have intravenous diuretics. And the family shouldn't be sitting here saying, no, you wanted your baby home to die, when we did not.
Okay. Would Martha's... can you tell me what kind of patients' lives matter... must support Martha's rule.
Yes.
Would Martha's rule and being listened to together have saved your son's life?
Oh, 100%. Because the first time we asked for a second opinion, then how can you discharge us at home with all diuretics when they failed in the hospital, would have raised a huge flag. The second time, on the 7th of August, when I begged that he recorded me saying that my son is dying, and they turned around and said, no, continue trialing oral. And I said, please, Maven, an immediate second opinion. Again, that would have raised the flag to get him treated. But on both occasions, it was denied. Patients' Lives Matter was first to advocate for justice for all, because this isn't just about Boron. It's a systemic issue. It affects so, so many people. And the next thing I want to do, when I can get around to it in relation to the resources, is to have a call line that people can ring in.
Oh, that's
a great
idea.
I've had thousands of people contact me. I've had thousands of people contacting me. One lady rang me the other day. Oh, we couldn't have an inquest into my son because we didn't have an autopsy. I said, well, you can have an inquest. No, I've not had an autopsy. So people out there are so misled in many aspects of A, what their rights are, what they can and can't do. And when things are really in your rock bottom, you don't know where to turn. I raised thousands, in fact, £4 million for charities. Yeah, when my son was diagnosed with stage 4 liver cancer, and I've supported probably 200 charities with cancer, I didn't know who to call. You're in that little corner and you think, where do I go? What do I do? And sadly, there is no single number. So that's the thing. And also the other thing we're asking for is a law called Balaram's Law, which I think is very simple and straightforward. And it asks that every medical institute is independently regulated by a single body. I have been to CQC, GMC, PALS, the hospital advice system, the coroner, the police, the PHSO. I've been to absolutely everybody about what's happened to Balaram, and everybody has closed the door to me and said, no, it's not our responsibility, it's somebody else's. They've even put the responsibility on the coroner.
Well, at that moment, I must read the right of reply from the hospital, which you will have heard of as well. And I will say goodbye to you, Jayesh Patel. And I do think the helpline is a brilliant idea, by the way. I hope you find the funding for it. And also, deepest condolences for what happened to your family, the loss of your son, Balaram. Thank you so much. A spokesperson for Guy's and Thomas's NHS Foundation Trust said, we wish to extend our deepest sympathies to Balaram's family. Balaram had incredibly complex health needs and had been under our care throughout his life, during which he was cared for by an extensive multidisciplinary team. Any concerns the family have will be fully investigated. And as you would have heard from Jayesh Patel, Balaram's father, I think there is an inquest next week. You're listening to me, Rachel Johnson, on LBC at 8:15. I want to hear from you. I'm going to tell the story of what happened to me when my mother was disbelieved in just a few moments. But has your gut instinct as a parent ever been disbelieved? Was your maternal or paternal sense of how your child was it better than a doctor's? 0345 6060 973. And do you think that parents should trust a parent's gut instinct about their children's much more than they do? The time is 8:16.
This is LBC.
When you sail on a Saga cruise, you really can relax, because so much is included. A choice of speciality restaurants? Included. A balcony with every cabin? Included. Wonderfully attentive staff? Included. Spotting a whale out at sea? Included. Realising the whale is actually just a wave? Included. Search Saga Boutique Cruises 2026 season on sale now. Experience is everything. T's and C's apply, over 50s only.
Tired of watching your uninvested cash do nothing? With the Bank of England base rate reducing, investment platform IG is doing something extraordinary. IG is offering a whopping 8.5% AER variable on all uninvested cash. Yes, 8.5%. Just open an account, transfer money in, and make one investment before May 31st to unlock this incredible rate. Visit ig.com now to open an investment account today. Your capital is at risk. GIA, ISA and SIP accounts only. Boosted rate applies until 31st August 2025. Terms and conditions apply.
At EDF, we don't just encourage you to use less electricity, we actually reward you for it. That's why, when you use less during peak times on weekdays, we give you free electricity on Sundays. How you use it is up to you. EDF. Change is in our power. Households who reduce their weekday peak electricity usage by 50% can earn up to 16 hours of free electricity per week, subject to fair usage. For all T's and C's, visit edfenergy.com/r-power.
Rachel Johnson on LBC. Call 0345 6060 973.
It's 8:17. You're listening to me, Rachel Johnson. We're talking about doctors. Should they trust parents' gut instinct a lot more than they do? Include parents in the care plan and all that. And basically, make sure the parents' views as to their child's well-being and their instincts around what's happened are listened to as much as the medical tests and the diagnostic tests that the child undergoes and the doctor's opinion, because I think that's right on the money. I'm just going to tell you a little story about something that happened to me when I was, I guess, of seven or so, having breakfast with my two other brothers and my baby brother Joe around the table. I remember the scene vividly. Our house in Primrose Hill, my mother was getting us all ready and up, and we were having boiled eggs for breakfast, and I was happily eating my boiled egg, and my older brother, known to you as Boris, made me laugh about something. And as I was laughing and eating the egg at the same time, I managed to inhale a large section of eggshell. And I knew something had happened, but I thought it would all be fine. I was seven. I didn't really know. I walked to school with my older brother. And as I walked to school to Primrose Hill Primary with him, I started vomiting. And I got to school and I sat in the class, in the back of the class, and I realised I couldn't breathe and I collapsed. And the school rang my mother and said, Rachel has collapsed and will you come and get her? I could still breathe, but it was very difficult. So she had a baby of 7 months or so and a two-year-old. She came to get me and somehow we all got to A&E. And she said at A&E that I had inhaled eggshell and it must have gone down into my lung because I was vomiting and I was having difficulty breathing. And they said, Mrs. Johnson, you are being hysterical. Rachel is fine. And she stood her ground, kind of babies dripping off her, me in a heap. And she said, I absolutely insist that you check her lungs. So I was taken into theatre and they gave me something called a bronchoscopy, which is where they send a camera down into the lung. I think they knocked me out to do this. I woke up in a ward a bit later with my mother sitting by my bed. God knows what she did with Leo and Joe. And in her hand, she had a small glass jar. Within the glass jar was a large piece of eggshell. And apparently the surgeon had said to her, Mrs. Johnson, we should have listened to you. You were absolutely right. Rachel had a collapsed lung and this was the cause of it. So, I mean, I hope that makes it very plain that you should always listen to the parents. They are the ones who know what the child's been doing, what the child's normal state of play is, his colour, his activity levels or hers, her vital signs. They're observed all the time. If you're a parent, you know this and I know this. You know if your child is off colour. You know if your child is ill. You know if your child is very ill. But, you know, and obviously you have to monitor for the really dangerous things all the time. Meningitis, sepsis, feverish convulsions and all those things. I mean, I remember my mother always used to say, it's absolutely terrifying being a parent because a child can go from absolutely bright as a button to a sudden terrifying illness and back again, all within, you know, a 24-hour period. So I'm very much behind this new research that says that doctors should trust parents' instincts about their children's health. What about you? Have you had similar experiences? We heard the tragic story of Bauman, whose father, Jayesh Patel, has been campaigning to have his death recognised, I think, as was it manslaughter against Guy's and Thomas's? And Guy's and Thomas's says that, you know, they listened and they did whatever they could. They cared for Bauman for 30 years. But having heard that story about my mother who had to hold her ground, does that remind you of anything? Have you had a similar experience? When I was on this morning with Giles Brandreth, he was saying that at Great Ormond Street, which is of course the leading hospital for the treatment of sick children, the teams there have absolutely recognised, and for years probably, that the parents are the first line. What do you call it? They're the first port of call, the primary carer. They're the ones who know best, who know most. And Giles was saying that, and I hope he doesn't mind me repeating this, as he did say it earlier, his grandson was born with something called baby cancer. And every night, somebody had to sit bedside to this little baby boy who was born with cancer. And if it wasn't the parents, it was the grandparents. And he said that they were absolutely part of the team. And they were listened to just as much as the doctors were. So it obviously does work if parents are listened to and grandparents are listened to. So let's get to cause on that. I mean, we don't have to use names. You don't have to use a lot of intrusive details if you don't want to. But has your gut feeling ever clashed with a doctor's opinion? 0345 6060973. So come on. I told you about the eggshell. I want to hear your stories. It's Rachel Johnson on LBC. Before, as you're grinding your way to the phone and working up courage to tell me your medical dramas, which honestly, there's nothing we love more, really. Let's pause because LBC's had a bit of a scoop this week. It's about children and knives. And LBC's learned that children as young as 14 are believed to be selling knives to other youngsters using apps such as Snapchat. Again, making me so grateful that my children went through their teenage years before social media and apps. And it comes after we revealed that the number of children bringing a blade into school has jumped a staggering 60% in just 2 years. LBC's crime correspondent, Andy Hughes, joined the Metropolitan Police as they arrested two teenagers suspected of using the social media platform to sell knives. He filed this report.
They'd be selling stuff, like selling knives and that. Like, kids be buying stuff, like they'd be going and buying knives and the parents don't even be knowing about it.
An unprecedented number of kids are carrying knives into schools. And for 18-year-old gang member Moses, it's clear how they're getting hold of them.
Parents should be checking phones and stuff to see like what their kids are doing. Most kids, where they get their knives from is online.
It's something the country's biggest police force is clamping down on.
It's an ongoing operation in the Met Police. Effectively, it's targeting individuals behind the marketing and supply of prohibited offensive weapons on online platforms, i.e. social media. A Snapchat user has been identified, the username of K6KK25, believed to be selling prohibited offensive weapons online, arranging collections in the Kilburn area of London.
The Met have invited us to follow its specialist knife crime unit. They're on their way to a raid on a property in northwest London. The officers say the suspects have been selling zombie knives and machetes to other kids on Snapchat.
Hello, it's the police. Can you come to the door?
So they've just started beginning to search the house. Now these kids are only 14 and 16, the suspects, and they're believed to have sold hundreds of knives across the country. Zombie knives, deadly knives. And we're here so early because it's before the school run. They need to catch them before they go to school.
This is DCI James Tipple.
We've been investigating social media accounts that sell knives. By doing that, they can bypass all the security legislation that prevents them from selling to children. So we look at identifying those people who sell prohibited and dangerous weapons.
A lot of these knives are ending up in the hands of children, aren't they?
They are. And that's why we're taking action against these sellers.
I've seen some of these accounts myself. You just open Snapchat and if you type in certain words or certain letters, all these things pop up. It's pretty rife, isn't it?
If you're in the right circles, they are visible to you. And if you're in the right areas. So children can access them and children can buy them.
And his team soon uncover some of the weapons they suspected.
I found in 14, 16-year-old's bedroom. And mums give them to us to destroy.
Okay.
Because they're completely legal. Mum didn't know they were in the house, so that's why she's given them up and given them to us to destroy.
So what's the outcome of this case?
The phone was found in the address. The phone linked to the Snapchat account. So we're going to take two people from the address down for questioning about that item.
Social media is fueling the sale of knives by kids to other kids. The question is, will the government mount pressure on companies like Snapchat to tighten their rules? And what will the police do if they don't?
That was the special report on children who as young as 14 carrying knives by Andy Hughes, our crime correspondent. Thank you very much for that, Andy. Well, look, I mean, it's 8:28. I'd love to get to calls on whether we should be trusting parents' instincts almost more than doctors. So on that note, Lenny in Ashford, you think maybe we should, or people's instincts rather than clinicians?
Well, I'm telling this story because I hope it will help someone, Rachel.
Okay.
And what it is, my younger brother died of prostate cancer. In trying to save him, I found out as much about it as I could. And he actually saved my life. Because a year after he died, I had regular blood tests, and my blood was 5.8.
That's your PSA test?
Yes.
That's quite high, isn't it? Ish?
No, it isn't mid-range. Excessively high, okay. but it is high. Okay? Anyway, so I knew straight away I had to see a doctor as quick as I could. So I paid privately for to go and have it and be examined. And the doctor said to me, after he examined me, "I'm glad to tell you, you are in the clear." I said, "Well, doctor," I said, "I'm a logical man, and there is a reason why my blood is a little bit high. So what I want to do is have a biopsy," which I found out that was the best thing to do when searching for my brother. And he said, "It's a waste of time and a waste of money. You're in the clear." I said, "It's my time, my money, and my life. I will pay for a biopsy." And they found it in the biopsy.
I'm surprised you didn't get a biopsy on the NHS, you know. My husband had one. He said it was one of life's less pleasant experiences.
Yeah, well, I didn't want to wait for the NHS. I was on the list.
Mm.
And I knew that with cancer, the quicker you find it, the better, and the quicker you can get things. So I didn't think of the money. I just had it done all done privately, so I got it as quick as possible.
Interesting that you had a better sense of what was wrong with you than the doctor did, the expert did. And did you then go back into the NHS for your treatment, Lenny?
Oh, yes. Yes, I did.
And
yes.
Did they read your biopsy results and accept them without having to repeat them?
Oh, yes. I never had to have it again. But I must tell you, the doctor totally misled me. And I am alive, but there was other treatments I could have had that would have given me a better life.
Understood. Lenny, thank you so much for ringing in with your story. Thank you so much again. In response to our exclusive on knives being purchased on Snapchat, a spokesperson for the app says, "Using Snapchat for the sale of weapons, including knives, is against our rules. If we find this content, either through our proactive detection or if it's reported to us, we quickly remove it and take appropriate action against the account. We also regularly work with law enforcement to support their investigations." And you can watch Andy's full investigation called The Knife Crime Generation on the LBC app, which features harrowing conversations with gang members, teenagers, and those on the front line of tackling the knife crime crisis across Britain. We'll get back to your calls on gut instinct versus doctor's opinions in just a moment, because the time is 8:32. Let's get the latest LBC news headlines with Tim Daly.
President Trump has appeared to suggest Elon Musk will continue working with his administration. He made the remarks during a news conference called to mark the end of his time running the controversial Department of Government Efficiency. A one-year-old girl has suffered life-changing facial injuries after a dog attack at Denton in Greater Manchester. She's recovering in hospital. The animal has been destroyed. And World Boxing will introduce mandatory gender testing to decide if fighters can compete at its events, including the 2028 Olympics. A PCR test will be used to determine an athlete's biological sex. LBC weather, breezy for much of the country overnight, with a risk of showers in the north and west, dry and mainly clear in the south and the east, with a low in some places of 5 degrees.
This is LBC.
Bring your pensions together with PensionBee and take control of your retirement. Because when your pension is in a good place, you're in a good place. When investing, your capital is at risk.
How do you grow a perfectly sweet strawberry? Well, it takes more than just soil and water, but time, care, and the best conditions to flourish. At Tesco, we keep every strawberry warm during the day and cold during the night, to ensure they develop the sweetest flavour.
Mm.
It may seem like a little thing, but to us, it's everything. Now, if you don't mind, the strawberries are sleeping. Tesco, every little helps.
Big, big, big motoring world.
Wow, wow, motoring world.
Yes, that's right. Big Motoring World is also Wow Motoring World because we price check our cars every day to guarantee you our best price, with up to 95% of them below market value. Big Motoring World, we're big on what matters to you. See website for nearest store. Visit bigmotoringworld.co.uk or one of our stores for our price promise and terms and conditions.
The Steakhouse Stack, with two layers of delicious beef, crispy onions and peppercorn sauce. It's the kind of McDonald's you take photos of to put pride of place on the mantelpiece. Sure, you'll need to make room, but you remember what your wedding day looked like? The Steakhouse Stack. It's McDonald's, and then some. Available until the 17th of June. Serve from 11 a.m. Subject to availability. Participating restaurants only.
Leading Britain's conversation, LBC, with Rachel Johnson.
8:34 is the time. We're talking about why is it that doctors don't trust and believe parents more than they do. A piece of research has come out of Melbourne, Australia. It analysed data from 190,000 A&E visits by children, where parents were asked whether they were worried about their child getting better or worse. And parents' intuition was significantly linked to the likelihood of admission, i.e. parents were a much better guide in the end than diagnostic tests. I look, I mean, obviously we all need to have tests and treatments, but parents were the first port of call. And that's where I think that's the first place that doctors should turn to. Grace in Stevenage, would you like to share your story with us?
Yes, Rachel, thank you for taking my call. Forgive it if I don't sound articulate enough. It's a very emotional story. So I had twin babies prematurely, and so they were immediately taken to NICU. They were born at 25 weeks. And I forgot to share this with your researcher. I mean, there was a day I visited, obviously because they were so young, they were in the incubator, they were constantly being monitored. One day I went to Yura's incubator and I saw that the middle of his head was a bit swollen, and I called the nurse and said, look, there's something wrong with him. She didn't seem to notice anything. I said, I want to speak to the consultant looking after him. And I said the same thing. Anyway, they believed me at that time, and he was immediately transferred to Great Ormond Street Gosh. They found that he had suffered hydrocephalus. They had to put a shunt in his brain. 4 weeks later, he was then doing well, doing okay. I eventually got the chance, because all this time I didn't have a chance to do any skin-to-skin that they do with preemies. So the first time I had the chance to do a skin-to-skin with him, and they were going to take him off me, I noticed that he made a sound and he didn't look quite well. And I said, look, he doesn't look okay and well. Of course, and I said, oh, yeah, because they blame everything on prematurity. Anything that happens, so you're always constantly being ignored unless you become a nuisance. And I said, look, I think he's wheezing. And the doctor came and said, no, he's okay. Maybe this voice box, he's had, you know, he's been intubated for a long time. And because by now he was on, what's it called now? The other monitor, they had removed the, anyway, he wasn't no longer intubated. He was on the second one. I can't remember the name now. CPAP. I said, oh, maybe that's why. I said, no, but he looks pale. And he didn't say anything. This was around 3 p.m. I said, by the way, he's getting better. He'll be moved to special baby unit. And for any parent who's had premature babies, we celebrate every milestone, because it takes one step forward, 8 steps backwards. So when I heard that he was moving from intensive care to SDU, I was, oh, okay, fine. So I believed them and went home. I said, I'm going to share the good news with Dad. And this was like 3 p.m. on Saturday. They wanted to move him the next day. I said, oh, don't move him, because by the way, they were twins, and Gabriel had an operation on Monday. I said, no, I wanted to still be on the same ward. Move him after Gabriel's operation. He had neck NEC, so that, you know, they can just be there for each other. Move him after the operation on Monday. Don't move him the next day. I went home. Rachel, I came back the next day. There were a whole medical team. His Ural's incubator was down. I just kept on hearing adrenaline, charge, adrenaline. I called the consultant, said, tell me the truth, is he gone? Yura was dead. By the next morning, he had sepsis overnight. I knew something was wrong. I shouldn't have left him. 3 p.m. on Saturday, I said there was something wrong. He was wheezing. He looked ill or something. Said, oh, he's, you know, he's primary. He's said all sort of the medical nonsense. He died less than 12 hours later, I think. Or anyway, he died. And so, oh, yeah, he suffered sepsis overnight. And Rachel, usually I stay on the ward. So at Chow West, I usually stay on the ward when they have major things coming up, like Gable, and I've stayed on the ward. They had just two rooms because my babies were the sickest on the unit. I had a bed and I had all sorts of things going on for me at that time. I could have stayed that night. You know, I keep asking what could have happened, because usually I stay, but because of the good news that, oh, they were moving him the next day to SV, I said, no, don't move him till Monday, till after Gable's operation, then we'll move him. I could have stayed with him. I knew there was something wrong. No one believed me. 7 years later, I had another daughter, and I picked her up from her childminder, and she... I picked her and said, oh, she doesn't look well. I said, oh, no, she's fine. She's been okay. She didn't eat much. And I said to the doctor, I said, there's something wrong with her skin. Can you not see it? She didn't notice it. By the way, she's got darker skin than me. I'm African, so my daughter's got darker skin than me anyway, so she didn't notice it. I took her to the GP. He said there was nothing wrong. But by this time around, because I knew that I thought I'd lost, but I'm not listening, I put my foot down. So I'm going to the hospital. I went to the Lister. I made a lot of fuss, about 5 consultants saw her eventually. There was something wrong with her. So we went to the hospital. But what I'm trying to say is that parents, a mother's instinct or father's instinct or carer's instinct is always right. They're with us 24/7. We know. Even if they're not with us, as in the case of Uriel in the hospital, I was monitoring everything. I was the one that alerted them to the water in his brain, which turned out to be hydrocephalus and had to be transferred.
How are Gabriel and your daughter now?
No, Gabriel passed away 101 days. They never made it out of
NATO. I didn't know that. I'm so sorry.
Uriel passed away at 57 days old.
Oh, I'm so
Gabriel,
sorry to
101
hear that.
Days. Yeah, but Eliara is fine. She is a joy to us, and she's just... She just being serious. I know parents say that, but you can't... When you see her, you just smile. She just... She's a joy to us. She's a blessing. Yes.
Well, you must be hyper vigilant now, Grace. I bet.
I am. I'm in a state of. I always go into the death mode. If anything happens, again, you know, I'm always like, "What could happen? What could happen?"
You must
what
do because the worst has happened to you twice.
Yeah.
The worst thing that can happen to a parent has happened twice. So you know that terrible things happen because they do. Mm. And once you know that, you know you don't sail through life like a cherry blossom on a stream anymore at all. Yeah. Oh, well, Grace, what a sad story. Thank you for sharing that. And I'm so glad to hear your daughter is happy and well. Grace in Stevenage, thank you so much. Stuart in Rochester, to you.
Hello, Rachel. Good evening. Thank you for taking the call and for raising this subject. Unfortunately, this is a topic which comes up quite a lot in the part of life that I am right now. To talk about my personal story, I have a 4-year-old daughter. We spent most of October, November in and out of the GP's office, being told that her coughs and colds were seasonal asthma. Here's a course of antibiotics. We'll see how you are in a few weeks. We knew something wasn't quite right, so we actually ended up going through a private ENT, ear, nose, throat specialist, who said, let's take her tonsils out. They look quite big. I know it's not something normally done on the NHS, but something's obviously not right. Due to his experience, he noticed at the end of the procedure that one of them wasn't right and sent off a biopsy to both our local hospital and to another specialist cancer hospital. We went for a post-op checkup 2 weeks later to be told that she's got lymphoma. We were rushed that day to the local hospital where we sat for 6 hours having blood tests and chest x-rays to be told that we'd almost wasted their time. Don't worry, it's nothing serious. Things like this don't happen within weeks and months, so we'll get you in 3 months' time and have another look. Fortunately, the consultant also sent the biopsy to the specialist who 2 days after we'd been at our local hospital called to say we need to start chemotherapy as soon as possible. So we are in and out of hospital. Well, I drive to and from every day, but my wife is an inpatient with my daughter, who's undergoing quite rigorous, intense chemotherapy.
How do you feel about the fact that you went to and fro with GPs, not believing, essentially, not listening to you when your instinct was there was something seriously wrong with your daughter?
The hardest part is that they are the health professional. So we, and again, with the NHS local hospital letter that says, you're a non-oncology patient, it's nothing to worry about. We went out and enjoyed that Saturday afternoon and had a day out as a family, thinking we'd dodged this bullet. And now, 2 days later, we're being rushed in. And the hardest part for us was that throughout her treatment, we know, and unfortunately have had to go back into our local hospital and have seen that consultant 2 rounds of chemotherapy later, who told us that we weren't a cancer patient, taking down the list of medications that we might need because now her temperature's spiked and they'd be looking after us for that period of time. So obviously all tongues bitten, nothing was said, very amicable, and they looked after us. But I can tell you story after story of parents in this ward with all these other children where they kept pushing and this bruising isn't normal or these headaches aren't normal or whatever it might be that then has put them on the same ward as us on a 5-year leukemia journey or whatever the cancer might be. And I'm so surprised that your phone lines haven't just lit up, because this must be so common.
Yeah, well, I'm getting some calls and we're taking our time with them, Stuart, because these are tender and difficult areas.
Of course.
Which relate to the fact that, you know, we have to trust the NHS, but the NHS also has to trust us. And it's a two-way process, isn't it?
Without question. And no one knows their child better than the person that's with them 24/7.
But doctors have a messiah complex, whereby, you know, I've met them myself, these consultants, that, you know, with great big brains bulging out, who, you know, treated the royal family, whatever. They're not always infallible. They're pretty good. I have to say that I don't have a comparable story for yours, but I'm sure there are lots of stories like it. And, you know, people do make mistakes. And do you think that when it came to you, it was just one of those things, an honest mistake, or do you think there was genuine negligence?
I struggle to put a finger on it. And I think we were in a waiting room for 6 hours, or we were part of a process for 6 hours in triage. And I almost feel like we've become a number. It's very difficult for them not to go symptom blind, maybe, or they're not expressing X, Y, and Z. And I don't necessarily think it's just these big things that, you know, you're going to get some very emotive calls, but sure. I think just the day-to-day illnesses, and just, sorry, one final point is, when you're taking your child into a GP or to a hospital and you've given them a bit of paracetamol or a bit of Nurofen to bring a temperature down or to perk them back up, if they're then at hospital and those medications kick in, they don't look like a sick child, but you've not gone through the process.
Yeah, Stuart, we've got to leave it. Sorry to bring this to an end, but we're late. We'll get back to your calls on this. They are streaming in. The time is 8:47.
This is LBC.
Next time you walk their dog or feed their cat, when you pop by for a cuppa or just stop for a chat, tell your friends about Pension Credit. They could be missing out on an average of over £4,000 per year to boost their pension income. Pension Credit also unlocks other support like help with heating costs, council tax, and a free TV licence for people over 75. Tell them to search for Pension Credit on gov.uk. Pension Credit. Credit where credit's due. Eligibility criteria apply.
When you're smiling.
Banning Dental Group Clinics. With over 5,000 top-rated Google reviews. Keep on smiling.
Find top-rated outdoor dining products on Amazon. Like this pizza oven with 5-star reviews. You'll get value and tasty pizza. All these barbecue gloves. Remember to take off before eating.
Or this large windproof umbrella.
Because nobody wants a wet pizza. Amazon. Find highly rated products at prices you'll love.
Darling, hold my hand.
Nothing beats a Jet 2 holiday. Discovering amazing destinations like Ibiza, Lanzarote and Crete. And relaxing in the sun with award-winning VIP service from the Which? Travel Brand of the Year 2024. So, book now from London Stansted with Jet2 Holidays. Package holidays you can trust. Patronage protected, subject to availability and conditions.
Hey, Harry.
Hello, mate.
Any tips for the game?
If it's games you want, your best bet is to check out BetVictor's Casino Games. They've got more games than you've had hot dinners. In fact, they've got more games than Las Vegas Gaming Convention's annual convention of games.
Lots of games. Got it.
Yep, there's over 4,000 slot games, including all your favourites like Big Bass Bonanza, live casino tables like roulette and blackjack, and casino games like Crazy Time.
Listen to Harry and make your best bet on BetVictor Casino. 18+ gamblerware.org.
Rachel Johnson on LBC. Listen on your smart speaker. Just say, play LBC.
8:49. Let's get straight back to calls about has your gut been right and your doctor wrong, to put it baldly. Juliet, you're a first-time caller in Wellingborough. Hi there.
Yeah. Hi.
And in your case, was your gut instinct right?
Yes, it definitely was.
Tell us the story.
So I had twin boys, at about 4 weeks old, just before they were 4 weeks old. One of them was admitted to hospital, projectile vomiting, couldn't keep anything down at all. They hooked him up to fluids and kept checking in on him, saying they didn't know what was wrong. I was worried about something called pyloric stenosis, which is where the muscle that goes into the tummy basically clamps shut so nothing can go down. I knew about it because my husband's mum had said about it, because he'd suffered it as a baby, and it can be passed down from the father, usually to the eldest son.
Wow, it's genetic. How clever of you to know about it.
Well, she was quite traumatised by the whole thing, so she did sort of keep going on about it. You know how what it's like when you're pregnant. You listen to all the horror stories. So I mentioned we had a registrar. It was one of those things where he was arrogant, to say the least. And he had 5 or 6 little student doctors with him. And so it was like he was playing to the crowd as well.
Yeah.
Every time I said about this pyloric stenosis, he just sort of brushed it off. He's too young, never seen it before, 6 weeks, blah, blah, blah. So basically, over the next 3 days, I just watched him get weaker and weaker, and thinner and thinner. He was literally, his arms were like little twigs. And they had to put cannulas in his head because his veins were just failing. God. So it was really quite traumatic. On the fourth day, I said to the registrar, what about pyloric stenosis? And at that point, he just went, no, dear. Or I just remember the dear really clearly. As I've said, he's way too young. And then he tutted and rolled his eyes as he looked at the students, and that was it. Something in me just clicked and I lost it, and I just said, I need to speak to your consultant. I need to speak to the consultant. And he just, calm down, dear. It's like, I'm not going to calm down. I want to speak to the consultant. I want to speak to the consultant. And my voice just kept getting louder and louder and louder until he basically ushered his students out. And half an hour later, the consultant came. She did the scan that he needed. And within the hour, we were on our way to the bigger hospital in the area where he had the operation that basically saved his life. And it was pyloric stenosis.
Yeah.
And from that day forward, I say to everybody who will listen, if you know this, as a mother, you know there's something wrong, and if you're not being listened to, you just need to shout louder.
Yeah, and you managed to get a second opinion, and now there's a rule called Martha's Rule, which means that you are entitled to ask for one.
Yeah, he's 13, almost 13 now.
How are the boys now?
Yeah, no, absolutely fine. Absolutely fine. As soon as he'd had the operation, obviously, he started taking on nutrition again. And, he was right as rain within a few months.
Imagine if it hadn't been for you, he may not be with you.
But they said he wouldn't have made it through the night. So, yeah.
I wonder if they ever learn these arrogant registrars playing to the gallery. What if your beautiful baby boy had died? You know, what if? And then they'd found out that he did have this condition, this that was life limiting unless corrected. I mean, I don't know how they sleep at night.
I don't either. It basically hid. I mean, the consultant was apologetic, but we didn't see him at all. He literally hid. I mean,
the
blue lighted. Yeah, we were blue lighted to it was Southampton, So
all's well that ends well. Juliet, thank you so much.
Previous story, I'm one of the lucky ones, obviously. But
well, yes, of course. Thank you so much, Juliet, for that. Emma in Winchester. Hi there, Emma. Hello, Emma. Hello, Emma. Oh, line's terrible.
Can you hear me?
Let's get Emma back on a better line. Meantime, let's get to Julie in Wimbledon. Julie.
Hi there.
Good evening.
Good evening. My story, about 15 years ago, I had a terrible bleed from my bowel and I knew it was serious. And I went to my GP. It was the first time I'd seen her. And she examined me. She said, no, dear, don't worry. It's piles. And I went, I don't think so. Yeah. I think it's much more serious. And I said, I need to see a specialist. And I said, can you give me the names of specialists at our local private hospital? And I went privately. And when I first saw specialist, the first question he asked me was, has anyone in your family had cancer after he'd examined me? And I said, yes, my brother. Anyway, he said, well, we'll do a colonoscopy. So if you go privately, at least it's quick. And within a week, I got the result, and it's cancer. And thank goodness I dealt with it. I'm here today. I was very lucky.
Interesting that you knew it wasn't just piles. You knew your own body better than any doctor, any GP who's seeing you for the first time.
Absolutely. And I think the reason I knew was that there was too much blood.
Yeah.
And I thought that is not normal.
No.
And so
you were right. And you were right.
Yep. And this private professor, I said to him after I'd had the colonoscopy, I said, what's the next stage? He said, an MRI. I said, look, can I have it privately? He said, no, I'm transferring you over to the NHS.
Okay.
They're the best people for you to see. And I had the most amazing treatments on the NHS.
Oh, I always love hearing those words. Julie, we've got Emma back on a better line, so forgive me. I'm just going to quickly get her in before we change the subject back to lawlessness and Robert Jenrick. Emma, very quickly, we've got a minute.
Hi there, Rachel. Hi. I've got more of a positive story and experience.
Good.
So my child is severely disabled. He's in a wheelchair with complex medical needs. And we are regular visitors to the Evelina Children's Hospital, which is Guy's and St. Thomas's. And he's just had his 15th or 16th, I've sort of lost count now, surgery for spinal scoliosis. And he's had three brain operations. And honestly, I found the consultants, the doctors are just excellent. They agree all their decisions, clinical decisions with me. They ask me if I'm okay with that or if he's okay with that. And I feel really listened to by, my primary role as a parent and my deeper knowledge of my child is always listened to. But, I mean, for balance, though, I think there is the odd old school, more arrogant consultant or doctor, the very odd one that I've typically locked horns with, and But I think the NHS on the whole is creating superb, a wave of newer doctors, you know, who have good communication skills.
And also an acceptance up following the tragic death of Martha, which led to Martha's rule that parents must be listened to. You must incorporate that in the treatment plan. Emma, that's all we have time for. Sorry, coming up after the news. Is it ever okay to take the law into your own hands? You will have seen the Shadow Justice Secretary turn as a vigilante on London Underground, bravely confronting fare dodgers with a camera crew. I haven't seen anything like it since Robert De Niro played a New York taxi driver and talked about the hard rain washing the scum off the streets. My question is, do we all need to be more vigilante in this state of permissive lawlessness? There's shoplifting, phone theft, antisocial behaviour, all of it. Would you take the law into your own hands and confront lawbreakers? If you saw it, I'm going to ask my own MP after the news.
On your radio.